Phoebe Pierpoint. Wow, what a story. What a story. Phoebe now coaches entrepreneurs for growth. But her backstory is absolutely incredible, inspiring, awesome. Difficult childhood. She realized in her teenage years that they weren't in the financial position that she was led to believe. She found out that she had to, you know, go to college on her own merit. So she worked hard, track and field. She ended up getting a scholarship. But then back injury led to surgery. Infection occurred. She had to leave school. Was told just to go on disability, did not worry about it anymore. She refused to do so. Second surgery didn't go well. It's absolutely incredible what happens. She gets burdened with a big debt from her father, unbeknownst to her, right before her wedding. She starts doing RV. She gets, it's incredible, incredible story, where she came from, where she is now. Many people would get all that and just rest back and collect and not do anything, but she ends up contacting these entrepreneurs, begging them for a job, gets a job there, learns incredible amount of experience and information from them, and then now teaches other how to do it. It's absolutely inspiring. She's got a great light. She's very humble, and it's just an incredible story. Love talking with Phoebe. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Joey Pins. People ask me, how did I lose 130 pounds? The quick answer is always discipline. I started my business, wasn't paying attention to my health, was eating too much, you know, drinking too much sweets. My daughter was born. Next thing I know, I'm pre-diabetic, I have hypertension. I knew something had to change. Discipline. I, like many of you, have faced many challenges in your career, in your family, in your life, in your faith. How did you attack them? How did you approach them? How did you solve them, hopefully? It all had to have some degree of discipline. I'm also asked, how did you found and start a tech business that lasted over 25 years? Discipline. I was committed to it, enjoyed technology, didn't enjoy some aspects of it, but knew it was necessary. Discipline. Our podcast mission, how do we use discipline to better ourselves and society? Join me, please, as I talk to interesting people and discuss how they use discipline in their family, in their passion, in their careers, and how it helped them. Our podcast vision, growth through learning from others. Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. It'll be light and serious. Join us, please. Thank you for consideration. So I will be having conversations with a lot of the coaches and the finalists from 2023 and, you know, just kind of talking about them a little bit and their solution in some future podcasts. We want to make kind of an introduction to that as well.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, like I said, as the years progress, more people are getting involved and back to these vendors looking for a way to create a name for themselves with consistency. They need people like you, which is why I'm so thrilled that you're willing to work with me and work with us on this. So you're going to be, you've graciously accepted to host these, and I appreciate that, where you'll interview all our contestants. You're also going to interview last year's head coaches, last year's judges, last year's finalists. So you're doing all that. And I think it's important, you know, for if you're a vendor and you're watching these, take note of this and how you get more involved. Watch the program. Watch what these men and women are all doing with us, because they're doing a lot. That's how you grow your business. If you're an MSP, watch these things. Get to know who people are and then inquire, because you're all looking to have stack alignment and you're all looking for credible and reputable businesses. We're vetting them out for you. We're putting them on display for you. Watch them, ask questions, find out, do your due diligence. Don't wait until IT Nation Connect to see you like at a booth and then buy five or six different technologies that you don't need.
So 2024, pitch it, ConnectWise, pitch it. What's going, what's new and exciting about it?
Oh my Lord. So for those that have not followed any of this, I took over the Pitch It program 2 years ago, and we've had such great success, with like really great success. And, you know, went from, it's become one of the most predominant programs in the space now. Matter of fact, I was doing some research the other day, and about five or six other pitching things have spun off from mine and from ConnectWise Pitch It with other people that are running it, you know? So it's great to see, because I think it's, the thing about Pitch It is it's all about about innovation. It's all about being daring and willing to do things, right? I mean, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's a scary situation. You have to be ignorantly optimistic, and you have to be willing to maybe fail a lot more than you'll succeed. And you have to have very thick skin, but you always have to be innovative and creative. So it's nice to see that people, that this has spun off into other groups that have started doing it, because I think the hardest challenge for most startup vendors is getting their name out there, right? Getting people to know that they exist. And the reality of it is you can't just be there one time. You have to show consistency. You have to be in there for the long haul for the partners to really be able to, for you to establish credibility, right? Because there's been plenty of fly-by-night businesses that have came out big and gone in 6 months. And for partners, their whole business is built around these vendors, these products. So they're making lifelong business decisions off of these. So, you know, so it's great. It's exciting. But yeah, but back to the program itself, it's jumped leaps and bounds. It went from being just a competition where they picked a few people, a few really good product companies to pitch at live at IT Nation Connect, to where we turn into an accelerated incubator program for, it's a season. It's literally a competitive season now at this point. And went from, you know, 5 or 7 or maybe even 10 vendors that are involved until they narrowed down to 3 to 2 years ago was 18. Last year was 26.
Wow.
You know, and we had way more applications than that. That was just the ones that we thought were the best fit. So yeah, we're getting ready to put out the press release in a couple of days, because then the application process will start February 1st. So I recommend anybody from around the entire globe to apply. We've had over just last year alone, 6 different countries represented, between the US, Canada, to Israel, to Australia, to New Zealand, to the UK. You know, they all involved in this competition.
The people, Matthew Koenig, so excited to talk to you. Always with a smile, always a pleasure, my friend. Matt, who's the best drummer ever?
There's a lot of them. I mean, ever. God, that's a hard one, just because you have so many different styles. I'm going to go with the normal answer, Neil Peart. But that's because of the complexity in his playing and the fact that he could play. A lot of people didn't know this, but he could play multiple genres. A lot of people heard him do prog rock for so long, but he was an amazing big band drummer as well. So
oftentimes I hear drummers more than, you know, any other musicians love Ringo Starr.
I like Ringo. Ringo is very simple, but Ringo's got some unique characteristics. As a drummer, I don't know if you're aware of this or who's aware of it. It's really hard to go simple, right? The emotion builds up, you're getting into the song, and you just want to do fills all over the place because that's how you let out the energy.
Right.
And Ringo is amazing at just playing to the song, only what the song needs. And, you know, every once in a while, putting in this little tasty lick in there that's not overdone, not whatever. And, you know, unless you really look at it, oh, wait a second. That was genius. What's wrong with that? So I love Ringo also, but again, different reasons.
He's often off, you know, over, you know, shadowed, right? Overshadowed by the other members of the band, obviously. But I always hear drummers cite him as one of the best.
He is, because again, one of the things drummers are supposed to do is play to the music, not play for themselves, not do all kinds of fills, not show off their talent, play to the music. And Ringo is a master at that. Just a master. You just think, he's not playing that, you know, it's not impressive. Yeah. Until you get down to understanding what's going on inside and all the other stuff. Trust me, what people think is hard when it comes to drumming and what is really hard when it comes to drumming, people would be surprised.
Marching band in high school in Florida, at Florida State, you even performed at Disney World.
Yep. It was a blast. So much of a blast. We had a great time. Hey, and when you're like, what was I, 19, 20 somewhere?
Yeah.
This back in the 80s. Yeah, like 89, 90, 91. They're paying you $22 an hour to go play the drums at Disney World. What? I'll pay you $26 an hour to come play the drums at Disney World. It was.
And you got to see all the underground. What's happening? There's a whole freaking city under there, right?
Oh, it's anything you could ever want. Barbershop, the best food. Believe it or not, the best food in Disney World, I think, was our cafeteria underneath the city. It was amazing. So yeah, it was really cool. And my favorite story from Disney World is I did this toy soldier gig. They always have the toy soldiers in the Christmas parade. And you're wearing these fiberglass outfits. You can barely bend. You got the horn players. You got us drumming. And you got the dance team, the drill team up front. Well, you start at the same place every time. And you go through this back gate where you go down and nobody can see or hear you anymore. Well, one day we thought we had already crossed the threshold. So one of the bass drummers starts with this boom, 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 boom. Next thing you know, we're all going boom, 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 boom. And the drill team's, you know, now dancing to it. Oh, my butt's never hurt so badly from a management reaming in my entire life.
Really?
We had not crossed the threshold people saw. And at Disney, that is a big no-no to break character.
Wow.
So it was one of my favorite stories and, you know, I think one of the worst lashings I ever had. But because of the union and everything, they couldn't fire us. All they could do is yell at us.
Oh, it's under a union. I even considered that. It's very
We had no choice. When you become what they call talent at Disney World, I don't know if that's the case anymore. You're paying union dues. It's part of it. You don't have a choice in the matter.
Sense of teamwork, being in those marching bands and eventually in another band, did that help you in your professional career?
Oh, absolutely. You learn how to listen. You learn how to work with each other. You learn how to take input. You learn how to mentor people. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that stuff. Plus, my favorite thing is one day I'm going to write this book, I swear, with ChatGPT now and everything, I'm going to write it. I always say everything I learned about leadership, I learned from having kids. Because you know what? In a lot of ways, you're doing the same stuff with your kids as you do your team, just of course on a different level.
Very interesting. So we met when you were at Rapid Fire Tools back in, 2016, I believe. You were there for five years.
There. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, and then they were acquired. What was that like?
It was interesting. You know, when I started at Rapid Fire, they told me I had three salespeople. I walked in the door and I had three telemarketers. And the reason I differentiate, salespeople don't have A through H, I through whatever. I was like, what are you doing to me? A few weeks into it, I'm trying to train them the best I can. Mark Winter, who's my boss, comes in and says, hey, I noticed you can speak in front of a group and everything. I'm like, yeah. Great. You're going to California next week. Here's your presentation. So over the course of the next few years, Mark and I, you know, as you know, we're the faces of the company and traveling to 50, 60 shows a year. But in the background, I was building out the account management team, the acquisition team, the pre-sales engineering team, the onboarding team. When I left, I probably had about 30 direct reports somewhere in there. And one could say it bought us. I mean, it was just, I don't think it's replicable in the fact that I got to build my culture from the ground up. I mean, literally starting it from nothing. So the culture was very much a reflection of what I wanted in a sales organization. It hummed. It went the way I wanted. I didn't lose people unless I wanted to. But I also could be very picky about who I brought in. I didn't care if you were an amazing salesperson. You didn't fit my culture, you weren't coming in. And Kaseya's culture was very different. So within about 6 months, I realized that this just wasn't a cultural fit for me anymore. It didn't make sense based on where I wanted to go and where they were going. So I chose to part ways.
You are secure now for a year, then ThreatAdvise and Galactic Advisors, but now your home is at Nodeware since about a year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a great spot for you. It's a great fit.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. I mean, I've been in the channel a long time. So when I left ThreatAdvise, it was of my own accord. And I left without having another gig because there were just things going on there that didn't make sense anymore. And, you know, we all agreed. As a matter of fact, about 2 months later, the CEO of that division and my other partner in crime both left also. So we'll leave it at that. But so I was doing consulting work with some MSPs because I like doing that sales and marketing stuff. And Nodeware came along. And the reason I say all this is to say, bringing companies to channel is hard. You know this. And there's a formula, right? And it's the same formula every time. What goes on underneath these things can be different on how you do it, but the formula is the same. And for me to do that again, I mean, I'm getting old. It wears me out traveling on the road all the time and everything. I wanted it to be in this order, a product that I believed in, that I thought really would make a difference in an MSP's life. Second, the cultural fit. Do I want to work with these people? Are these people that I feel I can work with and trust and grow with and build with? Then comp. You know, as opposed to a lot of people, and I was guilty of this when I was younger, go after the compensation plan, right? How much money can I make? I was very determined to make sure that if I didn't, with all my heart and soul, believe in this product, that I was just going to keep consulting. Mm. And I can honestly say that, and this isn't a sales pitch because I don't do product pitches. I hate it. You know, I'll give a 10-second overview, but I will just say I truly believe in this product to the core of my existence, that this will change the way MSPs go to market, the way they do business, and the way they protect their customers. And if I couldn't say that looking someone in the eyes, I just wouldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, and of course, MSP, the managed service provider, I'm a former one, as you know, and you know, giving them tools to better support the small to medium-sized business is very important, obviously, to them and to their clients. So when you found your home here, it's very interesting that you talk about compensation being last, because we often... Yeah, the youth don't really see it that way. A lot of times they're a bit blinded by it. And, you know, they're strapped with lots of debt. We can see that. But going back to the managed service provider, which is really a small to medium business, Matt, they need a lot of help. They're usually tech-led, and they suffer in sales and marketing and some of those soft skills.
Yeah, badly. And it's interesting. I mean, one of the things I teach, and you know this, I travel all over the world, literally. Went to Australia twice just in the month of October last year, 2 weeks apart. So I'm a sick human being.
Wow.
But what I teach is how to sell cybersecurity services. There are so many gaps, not just in their selling process, if they have one, or their thought process about sales, but especially when it comes to something as critical as cybersecurity sales. And I try to pull them away from product discussions and try to pull them away from, you know, I guess what I'll call technical discussions or trying to tell someone they're wrong, and really teach them how to get inside an SMB owner's head and get them to think about their company and what it would look like. And understanding what gap exists between what the customer thinks and what they know to be the truth. You can't just tell someone that's the way it is. And it's funny, in the sessions I give, one of the biggest things that seems to make one of the biggest impacts, believe it or not, because I only get 30 to 45 minutes. So it's not like if I'm not consulting, I can't give that much advice. But one of the things I think is interesting that seems to make a huge impact is I talk about confidence. And I talk about not going into a customer or a possible customer and going, "Hi, my name is George and I'm selling cybersecurity services and I think you really need them." Stop it. You're the expert. You know what they need. Your job, though, is to draw it out of them and get them to tell you that's what they need. And there's an art to it. And that's why I'm so passionate about teaching it and helping them. Look, I'm 55 at this point, and my wife always says, "Why do you talk about your age? People don't like ages." And you know what? I don't care. I'm proud of it. I'm 55. And I've just gotten to the point where whenever I give a talk, I tell people up front, look, I have no filter. If you don't want to hear it like it is, you get your feelings hurt easily. You know, you get upset if someone talks to you about stuff that, you know, you don't agree with or whatever the case may be, you should probably leave now. I've had people come up afterwards going, "You weren't kidding." I'm like, why would I kid about that? I don't have the tolerance for stupid anymore. And stupid doesn't mean doing it the wrong way. Stupid is I'm not even willing to listen to another way of possibly doing it. So I don't want you to get the wrong idea that I think if you're not doing sales and you're not doing that you're stupid. No, Not at all. It's if you have the opportunity to talk to someone and you're not even willing to listen to me, another MSP, I don't care who it is. This isn't about me. And you refuse to do so. That to me is stupid.
We must, one must stay open-minded. What should small and medium businesses know about cybersecurity?
You know, SMBs or the MSPs themselves?
Let's go to the small and medium business.
Sure. That they are going to be hit. Fact. If you look, I always laugh. If you looked at my home router every day, you know, you can go in and look at what's going on with it.
Sure.
I go look every once in a while just out of curiosity. If you looked at my home router and I didn't have all the protection up I had, the thing gets hit 50 times a day. And what I try to explain is you're going to get hit. It's a matter of how badly you're going to get hit. Well, my MSP is supposed to protect me. Okay, you're not understanding. Your MSP could charge you $100,000 a month and have the best security in mankind. You're going to get hit. But here's the reality. How bad are you ignoring stuff? So it's funny. Two of the objections MSPs have always told me they get from these business owners the most is, one, nobody's trying to hack me. And my answer to them is, great. You look to them straight in the face and say, you are 100% right. Nobody is sitting outside Bob Betting Barn thinking, I want to hack into them. However, think of a ballroom, 20,000 square feet, holes that are about 3 inches in diameter. Some have covers, some don't. I go up a 25-foot huge ramp and I drop 40,000 marbles. Do you think it's possible a marble will end up in one of those holes? The chances are highly likely that more than a few marbles are going to end up in holes. If yours isn't covered, your credit cards spend the exact same way as anybody else's. So therefore, you are 100% right. In most cases, unless you really piss somebody off, they're not trying to get you. They're trying to get anywhere they can get easy. And the next one is, well, I never hear about anybody being, you know, hacked or whatever the case may be that's my size. Well, you're right, because you want me to be honest? Nobody gives a shit about you. You're too small to show up on the news. It's not sensationalistic enough. And oh, by the way, if you got hacked, are you going around town letting everybody know how you got hacked? I don't think so. But statistics now say, the latest reports out for 2023 said it was, what was it? The study with 10,000 SMB owners or whatever. And when they talked to them, they found out, okay, and talking to customers and stuff like that, 50% of customers will not do business again with someone they know that's been hacked. Currently, people that are going after to breach businesses, 65% are SMBs. And those are defined as companies with under 200 employees, meaning for the purpose of breaching. I think of an MSB as being, you know, bigger than that in cases. But in this study, it's at employees of 200 or less. Dude, are you okay going out of business? Are you okay with having to lay off your entire employee staff? And that's the kind of stuff I teach MSPs to do. You know, you think about, you teach words like, how would you feel if? What would it look like if? Put them in their own head, get them to think of their own stuff, not the breach at Target, not the breach at, nobody cares. An SMB owner is not Target. They're not Home Depot. They're not AT&T. They don't care. How do you put them inside their own? And when you do that, you'd be surprised at the change in these SMB owners' eyes, because all they're doing is, no, I'm not spending more money. That's it. Okay? That's it. It's a money objection, period. I'm not spending more money. There's no logic behind it. And therefore, you have to get them thinking about their business and what the not tell them, get them thinking about their business and what the consequences could be before you're going to bridge that gap and get them to have that conversation.
I know, Matt, often when I was an MSP, I'd have quarterly meetings and, you know, we introduce a new layer of security, maybe DNS you know, filtering or something like that. And then, you know, it would be one quarter or two quarters later and there'd be something else that we want to introduce. And they said, well, we already paid for cybersecurity. We're not paying anymore. So that's my fault for, you know, saying that this is going to be one fixed and now cybersecurity's, you know, cured. So MSPs have to do a better job of managing expectations with cybersecurity and other products with their clients.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things that I fight every day, and if you're listening, you know who you are, MSPs should not sell cybersecurity. Let me explain what I mean. You have a security stack, okay? You have the tools that you know you must have in order to effectively protect a client, period. Now, you can have other stacks for larger customers that may need a theme tool or something like that, but your general average customer isn't going to need that. Okay. So not saying you can't have other things. This is my cybersecurity pack. You're getting it. Period. Nobody's going to understand what's in it. Nobody cares about the name brands in it. Okay. And I talk about how to break it out from your regular stuff and everything in my talks, you know, blah, blah, blah. But my opinion's always been stop trying to sell cybersecurity, price your pricing accordingly, show them your basic security stack, which is what everybody else is competing with and coming in there, and then show them here's the price of my cybersecurity stack. It doesn't matter what's in there. Nobody cares. Then put together the fact that this may go up by 10%, 5%, 3%, whatever you want, every 6 months. And the reason for that is to, for me to maintain the level of security I'm giving you now, the bad guys are that far ahead of us, that I'm going to have to be constantly evaluating, updating, changing, not because I want you to spend more money. I want to keep you protected. I can do the exact same margin. It's not about the money. So therefore, I'm going to have to review this every 6 months. And therefore, your price may go up by whatever it is, 5% every 6 months. Now you have a choice to skip one rev if you want. If you're behind, you're no longer a customer. Have a nice day. Because they try to sell this stuff. They can't sell this. There's no SMB owner in the world that's going, ooh, you got continuous vulnerability scan? Ooh, you got DNS? Oh, email security? That's fantastic. Here's what I'm paying you. Protect me. Have a nice day. Nobody cares. Matter of fact, I have MSPs telling me now, several of them, they're friends of mine. I know a few in the industry. And they said they're going to sell Nodeware. I have an ongoing bet. Some of these are from the Rapid Fire Tools days with a product we had. I have $500 for if you can walk into an SMB client, sit down with the owner, no co-manage, not an IT staff, and sell Nodeware. This is Nodeware. This is what it, like you're selling a Cadillac versus, if you can sell Nodeware like that, I got $500 out of my own pocket to give you.
Wow.
Needless to say, it's been very safe in my bank account collecting interest. Never had to worry about it because you can't sell that stuff. You must include it. And I'm not saying don't make them pay for it. I'm saying it's automatic. And here's one of the other things to think about. New legislation being put together and coming down. Guess what? If your client gets breached and it's found by a reasonable jury that you didn't do everything that was considered reasonable to do, your chance of being found liable goes up exponentially. Also, just in plain language from an insurance company and everything else, if they refuse to take the security and you still work with them, guess where that liability rests? You're putting your company as an MSP in danger to keep a customer. I don't know about you, but I don't know anybody or any amount of money that's worth screwing up my 5 years, 10 years, 20 years of hard work because they were stupid.
tough to be an MSP, Matt. You know, it's easy to say these things, but you know, you have a client that's paying you, you know, $10,000 a month. It's top five client, and they don't want to pay a penny more. And, you know, you don't want to lose them. You know, when I talk to MSPs, three things keep them up at night. First is cybersecurity. They're worried about their clients getting malware, whatever. And, you know, they charge flat rate, so they got to work on it. Probably going to lose the client. Second is staffing. They're worried about their big techs leaving. You know, how they're going to replace them. And then third is how they're going to grow. So, you know, what you're saying is so correct. And it's just tough to be a managed service provider. They're usually tech led. They're not, I don't mean to discourage here, but they're not the best leaders sometimes. And they're not good at sales. They start selling features versus value.
Yep.
How can we help them?
Well, I mean, I really think, first of all, to your point, I agree with you 1,000,000%. It ain't easy. I give advice based on experience, not because I think you can snap your fingers and make a change. I just want to put it out there that I'm not looking at you as a business owner and thinking I'm in your shoes. I know your exact business. And why aren't you just making this? I totally get that I don't know that. I can do is give you the advice of things I've learned over my time. And then you take that and use it for whatever you want. That's all I can do. So I don't want any MSP business owner listening to this thinking I'm just going, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing? No, that's not the case. And second of all, I think every MSP owner has to take a sales class. I'm sorry. I think every MSP owner should be required. Now, I know it's their own individual business, so I don't know who's going to require it, but should have to take a sales class. And people say, well, what kind of sales class? I don't know. There are all kinds of them. I got books back here. You can take a question-based selling class. You can take a gap selling class. You've got Jennifer Bleem. You've got Chartek sales courses. You've got, you know, I do teaching on the side. Not that it's a huge thing. And, you know, I don't moonlight a lot from Nodeware, but I've consulted as well. There are so many resources out there if you want to do it. And to your point, look, if you're tech led, you're going to get to a certain point and you're going to need help. You may not have the money at that point to hire a sales leader. So what's the next best thing? Invest in yourself. Learn some things. You know, I hear all the time, even from a marketing standpoint, which I know is not completely sales. I try all this marketing and it doesn't work. Or I hired a salesperson and I had to fire him within 3 months. And then I often sit down with them and go, well, hold on. What kind of leads were they working? What kind of information? Did you have a CRM to track? How were you doing some marketing to help them? Were your products packaged so they could easily go out and sell stuff? And go through all this, and then they go, well, no. Then what do you want them to do? I know you didn't bring them in and say, you have free reign. I don't know about sales. Go. So what did you expect them to do when you set them up for failure? So that's why I think every MSP owner should at some point, now some of them have been very successful, built large MSPs, now have great sales. I still think every MSP owner, no matter where they started, should have to take a sales class and understand a methodology and how it's done, even if they never use it. All these books, I don't use one of them. I've taken all these classes, and you know what? I use as Pete's and parts. It just, that's what fits my personality. So you don't have to just take one and say, this is it. But you should at least have some practical knowledge. And then, I know, I'm weird. There are these things called conferences. We may have seen each other at a few. And there may be, you know, a few thousand MSPs that attend these. Some are very successful. Some are just getting there. Here's a concept. Ask people you meet what they do. Ask them how they do it. If they're not in your market, what I found in this community is everybody's willing to share. They're willing to share how they did things. They're willing to share documents. They're willing to share methodologies. Ask. I mean, at the very lowest level, do that. And I still find a lot of people don't. And that's where it drives me crazy. And that's why I'm so passionate about teaching this and doing the consulting work I've done, because there's so many good people that own MSPs that just have a few blocks in their way from them getting to that $500,000 or $1 million mark or whatever the case may be. And I just go crazy looking at it going, I can help you. I want to get you over that.
Do an MSP today, Matt. And, you know, or their organic growth is, you know, less than 2%. You know, that's all referral based. They're doing quite well. And I said, well, you know, organic growth, you just do some marketing and just, you know, do some follow up. And he goes, oh, we're not interested in just emailing a bunch of prospects and we want to be more selective. I don't know what you're talking about. You want to get your services, just make it available to all them. And you never, if they're interested, they'll pass. And if they're, you know, it's just the mentality. And you can extend that to regular small to medium businesses too, because I don't really see that much of a difference, whether they're technology or whatever they're usually their leader is the creator of the service. It does the best job at the service, and they need it just like
that's a lot of vendors.
Anyone else. Even vendors, yeah,
because a lot of vendors in our space.
Oh, terrible! Yeah, a lot of former MSPs, right, that created a product, and you know, I work with a lot of vendors as well that just have, you know, the poorest of habits. And, you know, I have this great salesperson, don't worry, they'll get everything, but is there any marketing supporting them? Now, I'm guilty of that. In the 90s, when I started my MSP, as 95, 96, I hired a salesperson. I handed him the yellow book, the yellow pages. And it was terrible. I didn't understand the difference. You know, I had to learn. I had to understand. You mentioned conferences and, you know, peer groups is another great way too, by the way, for a lot of these. Of course, ConnectWise IT Nation had the great pitch event or contest. And I don't know, there was 20, 25 plus vendors, a 16 week course. And you were one of the finalists. You were top three finalists. You were up there on stage there in November at the pitch conference. Tell me about it. What was the experience like?
I can. I'm still bitter. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, it was great. I mean, look, when I went into this, when I talked to Sean and he said, you should apply, my expectation was literally one thing, brand exposure. That's it. That's what I was hoping for. What we got, of course, was a lot more. First of all, a lot of my team had never truly worked in the channel. Like when I say truly, yeah, they'd worked for some channel, but they'd never been to an event. They'd never had to interact with MSP. I mean, it's a different world. We know this. So they got to go to some of the expert sessions and hear things and listen to things and listen to questions other vendors ask. And they came away going, oh my God, I get what you've been saying now. Or, okay, remember this? Yeah, I have a different idea. That in itself was worth $1 million because of the fact that it was, I'll call it free consulting. You know, people got it from other experts. It wasn't just coming out of my mouth or it wasn't coming out of their head, all of a sudden they're starting to get it. The other thing it did is it gelled the company. All of a sudden, everybody was on a common goal. Wow. We're getting to the finals. CFO, how can I help? Director of engineering, how can I help? Everybody wanted to jump in and help. So yes, we got a ton of brand exposure. I was on dozens of podcasts. We were all over social media. We got lots of new customers. But you know what? I think the most long-lasting and enduring thing we got was the company getting an education, learning who we were, learning what we were good at, learning what we weren't so good at, and getting our team in front of experts that would technically cost tons of money to do, to give them an education and ideas and thought processes and everything like that. I mean, that was the huge benefit out of it to me. Now, don't get me wrong. You know I'm a competitive person. I want it in the damn finals. So I'm not saying we didn't go after it. I'm just saying as far as I was concerned, I look at it kind of like American Idol, right? The first one gets all the glory and all the stuff and $1 million recording. Well, last time I've looked at American Idol over the last 25 years, so does number 2, 3, 10, 20, 15, 16, right? They got an appearance. They got out there. And guess what? People that really liked them went after them no matter what place they were in. So the reality at the end of the day is that's kind of the position I took and was just thrilled that I got in the finals, you know, and got to present in person.
Great job up there, Matt. You did a great presentation. I watched the whole thing. I was there for everything. It's just everybody wins, like you said.
Yeah, it was. I don't know anybody that did it that had a bad experience. The only people that had bad experiences are the people that didn't try. Because this goes back to, I said this the other day, right? Somebody said, if you had to sum up pitch it in one word, what would you say? Listen. That's the word I would say. Listen. Everybody goes into this thinking they know what's best, right? Especially a business owner that's built a company and everything. Well, remember, these are all startups. So whether you've done a startup before, this is a new one, especially if you're new to the channel or whatever the case may be, or you've been an MSP and now you're a vendor. It's a completely different go-to-market strategy and everything. So my one word for pitch it would be is if you get involved, listen. That's it. If you listen, and go through the process and take it seriously, you're going to come out the other side, whether you go to the finals, whether you win, with such an amazing experience and so much positive stuff. It's amazing.
That's really wonderful.
I will tell you, Sean will flirt with you to get you involved and then leave you at the altar. I used to be his best side chick, and now he doesn't talk to you anymore.
Really? I find that hard to believe. He does such a great job, and they're going, I think this will be the fourth year, and I'll be involved with it this year a little bit more than I have in the past. And I'm just really, really excited about it. So Matt, I started my MSP in the 90s and I was working way too hard and, not paying attention to myself. And I think, you know, the story, and, you know, I got myself up to 340 pounds. Right. And, doctor said to me, if I don't, you know, lose the weight, I'm not going to see my daughter graduate. She was just born. So I spent the next 6-7 months, lost about 130 pounds and kept it off. And people want the quick. I know you're a gym rat. You have an excellent routine. But people ask me some quick, you know, what was the success? How'd you do it? You know, and my one word answer is always discipline. That's it. Just discipline. I wonder how discipline plays a role in your life.
Well, discipline plays a role in my life in a lot of ways. First of all, it keeps me sane. Without discipline, I'm all over the place. I'm ADHD as hell. I also have OCD that I actually have to take medicine for. So it's not just like people say they're OCD. So within reason, I have to be regimented, right? For me to know what to do. So my day, outside of calendared meetings, I know what I'm dealing with in the morning. I know what I'm dealing with in the afternoon. And I know what I'm dealing with after hours because it's the same stuff every day, whether that be returning calls, HubSpot CRM updates, meeting with my team, same days, same times, same whatever. When I go to a show, I have a complete routine. My travel routine is very specific to make sure I don't miss anything, to make sure I don't forget anything. When I go there, how I do the boot, I mean... Going to the gym and making sure I don't give it up. As you said, there are lots of times I don't want to go to the gym. But you know what? Especially like if I'm at a show, but people have seen it. They didn't believe me, but at 10 p.m., I'm in the gym. Because I know if I'll get myself there, I'll feel better. So I think it's just the discipline to know what you need to do. More importantly, know that you don't know what you need to do and find out. And then make a plan. And to your point, taking care of yourself should be that top priority. Because you know what? Doesn't matter how much money you have if you're dead. Right? My wife and I talk about this all the time, right? We've done okay as far as our careers and putting money away and stuff. And, you know, we always worry about money because that's just who we are, right? We're always worried about, should we do this? Should we do that? Well, you know, then you get a little older and you realize, holy crap, you know, we're empty nesters now. My kids are grown. I have a grandchild. And what are we going to save all of that money for? Right? Why aren't we going traveling? Why aren't we doing things we want to do while we can? Because you know what? What you really learn, and I shouldn't say I didn't believe it. I heard my parents. I listened to my parents and I said, that makes sense. But as I'm sure you know, and others out there know, you get to a point where you realize, holy crap, they're right. You never know what tomorrow's going to bring. You never know what next year's going to bring. So one of the things I'll always tell people is, look, eat right. Now, I'm not saying you have to eat like a rabbit, right? Just eat right. Do your thing. Take care of yourself. Go to your doctor's visits and stuff like that. And do stuff for your mental whatever. If you're working all weekend, every weekend, look, I know sometimes you got to do a job on the weekend. It's the way it is. But if you're working all weekend, every weekend, I know you think you're hustling and you're trying to make a lot of money. What you're going to do is you're going to burn yourself out. You're going to make yourself unhealthy, and you're going to get yourself to a point where you can't grow your business anymore because you're not mentally or physically capable of doing it anymore.
Hmm.
And it took me a long time. When I'm preaching, trust me, it took me a long time. I started in the enterprise space. I used to work 7x24. You're working on a $10 million deal with a large Fortune 100 company, and you got all kinds of different decision makers and engineers involved and all. Been there, done that. Burnt out, got an ulcer, literally, that I had to have treated. Ended up with high blood pressure, et cetera, et cetera. And this was all in my late 20s. We're not talking about my 40s or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it all of a sudden hit me that, you know what? I can make all this money, but then what? If I don't ever spend it, what's it going to do? And everybody goes, well, you never know what's going to. Yeah, to a point, you're right. You never know what's going to happen. So put away money for a rainy day. But how much money do you need put away for a rainy day? Right? Live your life. Enjoy your life, be there for your kids, be there for your spouse, or significant other, because when you take your eye off the ball like that, you're not helping anybody. And you're eating incorrectly and you start drinking, which, as you know, a lot in the channel like to imbibe heavily,
a little bit,
then you end up divorced or something. And when I say all this isn't fear, uncertainty, or doubt, this is what I've seen. Over the last 15, 20 years, I've seen all of this carnage. And it's like, look, I don't know your marriage, so I can't get involved in that. But the other stuff, you could have been. Look, when I go to shows now, I'm very careful about what I eat. Not for any other reason that I don't want to be, but 300 pounds.
Right.
Your desire. So, you could easily fall into that. I don't go to after parties because I don't like to drink. And I also don't want to show up on social media, at something where something happens or whatever. But anyway, I sound like I'm preaching now. To answer your question, you have to have discipline to do the stuff that you want to accomplish. You have to have discipline to do the stuff you're not sure how to accomplish.
Mm.
Discipline to go get the advice, go get it, and actually implement it.
Going, thesis, Matt, that discipline is a spectrum. And I heard, I'm going through it now. I hear you say control, routine, order, focus. It's all part of it. And you execute it well.
Thank you.
Matt, how do you, what motivates you?
If I answered this in my 20s, I would tell you, being the best. I want to be number one. I never want to be number two, because if you're number two, it doesn't make any sense. That means you didn't put in enough hard work. If I look at mid-career, probably my 40s, money. Money motivated me. I wanted to make as much money as humanly possible so I didn't get stuck later on not having enough. But now, my wife, my kids,
and kid.
Being able to enjoy my life, traveling. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely one that subscribed to money can buy you happiness.
Mm.
And my grandfather was worth, I won't get into the figures, but let's just say a lot of money. And he was the most miserable human that I ever knew. And I didn't realize that till later on in life. And what I realized over time was money doesn't buy you happiness. It buys you choices at a point. So my answer is not to work hard, but know why you're working hard. What are you working hard for? Because if it's an empty abyss, then yeah, it's an empty abyss and you're never going to be satisfied. That craving is never going to be satisfied. And right now, I like the challenge of bringing Nodeware to the market. I've done it with a few other companies. I like the challenge. It's a lot of fun, right? I get up, I enjoy myself. I like the travel, you know, although I could do without the airports nowadays, but I like being in the shows and speaking and being with MSPs. But really, when I get up in the morning, getting to be with my wife, keeping my health in check so I can live as long as possible, you know, getting to see my grandson as often as possible, mentoring my kids, because, you know, those of you that have kids know it never stops, right? It just never stops, and being around for them. I don't want them to see me as the dad that isn't in their lives or isn't present or isn't around when they need me.
But given that, Matt, how do you measure success?
I measure success at this point by when I make up in the morning. Am I happy or am I miserable? And I know that sounds weird, but when you boil it all down, because there are, of course, other things that go into that. But when I wake up in the morning, am I excited for the day or am I dreading the day? Now, everybody has bad days. So I'm just saying overall, am I happy more days or dreading it more days? If I'm dreading it, it's time to make a change.
Yeah.
Right? If I'm excited about it, then I keep doing what I'm doing, right? Add to that, subtract from it like normally. But if you just get to a point where you're dreading getting up more than you're happy when you wake up in the morning, you need to really look in the mirror and think about making some significant changes. Now, you may not know what's making you miserable, and that's okay. It's what therapy's for. That's what reading is for. That's what, you know, groups are for, peer groups, talking through stuff is for, right? You may not know exactly, but if you ignore it, I can guarantee you it's just going to get worse. And if it gets to a point where you're waking up every day and you're miserable, that's when things start to go downhill everywhere. You got to decide what makes you happy and do it. And again, we all do some things that are unpleasant. I hate firing people. Hate it. Literally still to this day makes me nauseous the night before. I can't sleep. My stomach's upset. That doesn't mean I haven't done it 100 times in my career because I had to based on things that were going on. So I'm not saying everything's pleasant. I'm just saying, though, you got to decide what makes you happy and move towards that. And even if you're doing something right now because you're saying, look, it's the thing that will make me happy because it'll get me to my goal, that's fine. But do you know what you're doing is getting you to your goal? And therefore, in essence, that's making you happy because it's getting you closer to whatever that goal is. You know, I'm a big believer in goals, and I used to give my sales teams what I call life exercises, and I'll explain it in 30 seconds or less because, you know, we used to go for it for 30 minutes, but it's basically take your favorite journal, pad, pen, whatever. If you want a drink, if bourbon's your thing or a glass of wine or whatever, go sit somewhere quiet in your house or the library or your favorite place in the park. I want you to write down everything you ever wanted to try, do, or be. And nothing's off limits. I mean, nothing. Whatever pops in your head, you write it down, even though you're going, I don't know that I'd ever do that. I don't care. If it pops in your head, you write it on the list. When you're done and you've exhausted everything you can think of, go back through it now with you involved and cross out anything you go, I've thought about it, but I don't think I'd ever want to do it or be it or whatever. Like one of mine, the thought of skydiving thrills me. It ain't happening, but it thrills me conceptually, right? The speed and everything. It's still never happening. I die on my way out of the plane. So that's an example of one that, you know, came out of my brain as something, you know, that I'd like to try, but it ain't happening. So I'm crossing it off. Go through the list and cross off anything. If you did it right, there are going to be things on that list that you're going to need to cross off that you go, nah, I've thought about it, but nah. Or I wanted to be a doctor, but it's too late, whatever. Now, if you choose to, add your significant other back in. Now, based on your relationship with them, what are things that you're willing to give up? And I'll give a for instance. somebody that said, I want to race cars, right? I want to race cars on the weekends. And their spouse is dead set against it because they think you're going to kill yourself and everything like that. And it's expensive. Maybe you go, you know what? I've always wanted to do it, but she's right. And I really don't want to piss her or him or whoever off that badly. So I'm willing to take that off. Whatever it is, right? Once you have them back in, what are the things you're willing to give up because you know it would cause a bad effect on your relationship? Guess what? Two things when you're done. One, you have to look yourself in the mirror and know that everything you crossed off that list, you took away from you. No one else. Not your spouse, not life, not your parents, not your sisters, not your brother. You took those things away from you because you decided. Secondly, you now have a life list. If at the end of every week on Friday, you look at this and you've gotten no closer to anything on your list, what the hell did you do this week? Because that's what's important in life.
That's a very worthwhile exercise.
I've taught it to a lot of people, and I know several people who said it changed their whole perspective. I know people who changed their whole careers over it. It's just, look, you don't have to do everything on that list. But at that point, you should be motivated to know this is stuff I really want to accomplish. So the question becomes, pick a few of them and how are you going to get it done? Because that should be your focus, not how much you can work. Now, you do have to work hard to get the money to do some of those things. So again, this isn't about saying, don't work, be happy. No, work hard, but have a goal that makes you happy.
A pleasure. Always a pleasure talking to you, Matt. I love your insight. I love your perspective. Anybody who's listening, how can they get in touch with you?
Sure. They can call me on my cell phone. No, I won't do that.
No, I don't think that's the best idea.
I've done that before and it backfired. Now, they can email me at matthew2t's.koenig, K-O-E-N-I-G, at igicyberlabs.com. They can DM me on Facebook. I'm in all the MSP groups. They can DM me on LinkedIn. I'm on there as well. And, you know, I'd love to talk to anybody about anything they want to talk about. It doesn't have to be about Nodeware. Let's talk about sales and marketing. Let's talk about operations. Let's talk about you're having a bad day and how I can help you. We're all in this together. I mean, my true belief, big industry, small community, we're all in this together. And we all need to support each other to get to where we all want to go.
Fantastic. Always enjoy talking to you, Matt. See you on the road again soon. And we can always collaborate on how we can help not only managed service providers, but the small to medium-sized business as well. You be well, my friend.
You too. Appreciate it.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening and or viewing Joey Pinn's Discipline Conversations. Please share this episode with one or two of your friends who you think may benefit from the episode. Our website, www.joeypinns.com. There you find lots of resources and you could join our mailing list. Please follow us on all our social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Podcast information, the video version of our podcast is on YouTube. Please subscribe. Audio is on all major podcasting platforms. Please follow them. And if you like it, please consider giving 5-star rating. Would really appreciate that. Would you like to financially support the podcast? You can go to our Patreon site, consider $5, $10, or $20 a month. There's all kind of plans that we have there. There's like a one-time payment. What is this podcast episode worth to you? $25, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, $5,000. You be the judge. You can go to our PayPal account to do that as well. Thank you again for listening or watching Joey Pinn's Discipline Conversations.